The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And welcome back. The second half of the program is live, and it has been busy so far, talking about the Tennessee situation. We'll continue talking about that, a preview of basketball later. In our final hour, Shane Beamer, the new coach at South Carolina, will join us tomorrow. And this, breaking down the college football coordinator carousel with Adam Rittenberg, who covers college football for ESPN. And Adam, it's great to have you with us. The LSU conundrum has just been solved. Other stories out there, Nick Saban's hiring pretty much every available NFL head coach, or so it seems. Good afternoon, and take it from the top. What has this been like to cover?
Yeah, happy New Year, Paul. Good afternoon. And yeah, it's always a secondary part of the coaching carousel. The most focus is on the head coaches, obviously. But in a year like this, where we did have more of a robust head coaching carousel than many expected, with Texas and Auburn and now Tennessee opening, I think the real intrigue was always going to be with the coordinators this year. You know, if a team wanted to keep its head coach because of finances or contracts or the pandemic, you know, they were still likely to make changes on their staff if they were coming off of a poor season. You saw that at Michigan, certainly, with the defensive coordinator change there that Jim Harbaugh made. And so, you know, there's still some that are going on. Washington's still looking for a defensive coordinator. A couple spots that are still open around college football, but certainly LSU getting the defensive coordinator hire done today with Durante Jones, a step forward after certainly a meandering search there.
I want to ask you about one. We had Coach Wilkes on, Steve Wilkes on yesterday from Missouri, who had, you know, had one of the great reputations as a defensive back. Coach in the NFL. He was the DC for the Panthers when they went to the Super Bowl, and then ultimately became the Arizona Cardinals head coach. But that was an interesting choice. By the way, could not have been more impressed with him during his conversation. But how about these NFL coaches heading to the college game? We don't see that very often.
No, we don't. And there was so much talk, Paul, this year that it would go the other way, that college coaches may be fed up with the transfer portal or NLI that's certainly coming around the sport. You know, just the lifestyle, might want to go to the NFL. But you know, we've actually seen it more the other way with NFL coaches, certainly Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone at Alabama, and then Steve Wilkes, who really has spent a long time at the NFL level, hasn't been in college for quite some time, but has that connection with Eli Drinkwitz at Appalachian State, you know, being an alum of that school and then wanting to get back on the sideline. I think it was a really smart hire by a young head coach, bringing in an experienced defensive coordinator in Steve Wilkes. And in, you know, covering that search a little bit, I think that's where Eli focused. He wanted experience, you know, whether it was college or certainly there were other candidates who had spent time in the NFL, and certainly to bring in a former NFL head coach, a guy with extensive coordinator experience to Missouri, I think is a smart move. You know Missouri's going to score points as long as Eli is there, but how do they defend? Can they defend better than they did down the stretch this past season? You know, if they do, I think they're going to be a factor in the East Division going forward.
Adam Rittenberg with us. Adam, let's get to the hottest story in college football. We have an athletic director now at Tennessee. Presumably, he is going everywhere at this hour trying to land a head football, because we just had Connor O'Gara on 30 minutes ago, who is convinced or seemed to be pretty sure that the right move was to take the time, let Kevin Steele be the interim coach for a year. I don't know if he's in the minority or the majority, but that's the first time I've heard that enunciated. What are you hearing?
Yeah, that's an interesting point that Connor makes. I mean, I thought that was a likely outcome if they were going to take longer with the athletic director search. You know, those searches typically don't wrap up as quickly as Tennessee's did. You know, just a few days after announcing Philip Fulmer was retiring, they announced Danny White as the new athletic director. Usually those searches take more than a month, 2 months, 3 months. But as soon as Danny White came in, in talking to agents, other sources around the industry, they knew this was going to be a full-scale coaching search, that it wasn't going to be Kevin Steele just for a year. I think that would have been the outcome if they were still looking for an AD into February, maybe into March. I do think it's important that Tennessee gets this hire right. It's a critical point in the program now, having had so many head coaching changes since Fulmer was kind of forced out after the 09 season. Can they get this thing back on track? And who's wanting to step in with this looming uncertainty of the NCAA sanctions that are going to come down? So it has been, I think, a little bit of a challenging search, but Danny White's very good at this. Doesn't allow a lot of leaks. Doesn't talk to agents. He wants to communicate directly with candidates. And so we'll see how this thing turns out. But I do think the moment that he was named athletic director, everybody around this sport knew this is going to be a full-scale coaching search with a hire most likely made at some point this week or next week.
Adam, what would his past indicate to you about Tennessee's future in relation to this availability, this vacancy?
Well, I think he's a guy that's not afraid to take a chance on a coaching hire. I don't think any of us saw Josh Heupel as a successor to Scott Frost. Josh had been a Power 5 coordinator at Oklahoma, but wasn't really seen as a hot coaching candidate at the time. But Danny White brings him in, and they do have success building on what Scott Frost had done at UCF. I thought the Lance Leipold hire at Buffalo was outstanding. Guy who's won 5 Division III national championships, who hadn't done it at the FBS level as a head coach, but he's gone on and done very well at Buffalo, getting them to a couple of MAC championship games. So I think he's very interesting to sort of read during this process. A guy that as I'm talking to my colleagues, Chris Lowe and others, we're like, who are we not thinking about? Certainly there's some obvious names here. Whether it's a guy like Tony Elliott. We heard some buzz around James Franklin early in the process, but who is someone we're not thinking about who Danny White might be more interested in hiring? Even Scott Frost. Scott was a fairly hot coordinator candidate, but he was all the way in Oregon, and Danny White brought him to UCF all the way across the country in an area where he hadn't really worked before. That was a bold hire that certainly worked out well for that program. So I'm very intrigued to see if there's some mystery candidates that we're not hearing about, and maybe that ends up being the choice for Tennessee.
Yeah, and I want to continue on that, because everybody's opinion is their own, and that's fine, but it just seems like Danny White is not on the dark side of the moon now for 5 days if he's going to stay the course and elevate Kevin Steele.
It's certainly possible. We heard Kevin Steele was certainly going to have a conversation with Danny White. He's there in Knoxville. He stepped in as an alum, as an accomplished SEC assistant coach, obviously had a head coaching run at Baylor, didn't go well, but it was a long time ago. And I think Kevin's a better coach now than he was at the end of his run at Baylor. He knows the SEC about as well as any coach in the country, including some of the sitting head coaches, has worked at LSU, has worked at Auburn, has worked at Alabama, could have gone, I think, to a number of SEC programs during this offseason. One of the best defensive coordinators in college football. So definitely don't want to rule him out. I think the challenge here, Paul, and I'm curious your take, is who is Tennessee, their fan base, going to embrace? There is a profound negativity around this program, and I was struck at the comments from both Danny White and Chancellor Plowman last week, going out of their way to speak to the Tennessee fans. Let's tone it down on Twitter. I think Danny White said, text your buddy. Don't blow somebody up on Twitter or just that whole part of this because of what happened in the last search. You cover the SEC better than anyone. Is it unique to Tennessee, or is it just because of what they've gone through as a program with all the dysfunction and the poor hires and the lack of success in the last decade? But it does seem, I talked to a coach last time who was in the mix last time at Tennessee Today. I mean, that negativity, that toxicity around this program is part of this process, and is it going to be something that Danny White and whoever he hires are able to overcome, or is it going to linger on whether it's Kevin Steele or whoever they hire, you or me?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Adam. It was an astounding comment, but I understand trying to send that message. Now, will anyone pay attention to Danny White or anyone else, for that matter, when it comes to Twitter? Twitter will be the death of us all. But I will tell you this: I have spoken to at least two different former Tennessee head coaches. And they have both pointed at and this will be surprising, maybe not to you, but to some people, at the local media's negativity. And you know, usually you think of a college town, Adam, as being all in for the team, but not in Knoxville. There's a lot of shots taken. It drove Butch Jones crazy, and he's not the only one. Jeremy Pruitt was pretty close to it as well, but. That's really where I would concentrate for Danny White. You're not going to control the Twitter sphere, but you could try to maybe develop better relationship with the people that are living there and covering you.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's going to be part of his job. I think his immediate job is to find somebody who can handle the criticism. That's going to be important for whoever tennis, even at the best of times. Any SEC head coach needs to have thick enough skin to handle the tough times. The Twitter, the local media, you're just very national media criticism. It's going to be a program that's going to be discussed, you know, regardless of how the results are. And if they're not good, you're going to get some heat. So I think that's an important criteria, maybe more so than in a normal coaching search. Can you take the heat? Can you take criticism? And if you can't, even though you might have the other qualifications to be the head coach at Tennessee, that might be enough to sway Danny White away from a particular candidate. I do think that's part of this. Whoever they hire, I think it would help certainly if they hired somebody who's been a head coach in a tough environment, has handled criticism, whether it's in college or in the NFL, because you're going to face that no matter what at Tennessee.
Would you agree before you go, Adam, with the prevailing wind that Hugh Freeze is a non-factor in this coaching search?
I do. I think just because of the circumstances, you know, and I'm curious your take, Paul. The two best candidates for Tennessee on the field, just purely on the field of what they need, and probably in recruiting, are Hugh Freeze and Lane Kiffin. Now, are Hugh Freeze and Lane Kiffin going to be the next coach at Tennessee? I can't see it. But for what they need, quarterback development, excitement, fan base would be fired up. They'd be over the moon, certainly for Hugh Freeze. I don't know. The Lane thing is more complicated. But for what they need on the field, you have these two candidates who maybe you could get one or both of them as the next coach. But because of what's going on with the sanctions and the you know, the violations under Jeremy Pruitt, I don't think they can go that route. But in terms of what they actually need as a program, it's probably Hugh Freeze or someone like Lane Kiffin.
No, it's bewildering that the best choice is not going to be hired, and he's available, and he would crawl from Lynchburg to Knoxville. That's the amazing part of it.
Yeah, and absolutely. And a guy who has certainly rebooted his coaching career. I have a piece coming out next week on ESPN Plus on coaches who have improved their stocks. And Hugh Freeze, undoubtedly, the last two seasons, especially this last year, has shown that no matter what you think of him off the field, whether you just don't like him, the guy can call plays, the guy can develop quarterbacks, and the guy can generate elite offenses. And at some point, he's going to have that chance again in the Power 5, most likely in the SEC. I just don't see it happening at Tennessee in 2021.
For those who are watching closely, over his left hand, over his left shoulder, there is a Shoney's Big Boy sitting there, which was my favorite place to go as a kid. I'm hungry right now for one of those burgers, Adam. Do you go back? Is that part of your past? Do you used to work there? I'm just curious. Where'd you get that?
No, I grew up in California, so my first Big Boy experience was here in the Midwest, and I had to get one. You know, started going in college, and probably need to lay off of those these days. But yeah, at least I'll display the little guy up there when I come on your show. I didn't know you were a fan.
What I wouldn't give to be back at one right now. Hey, I think we all would like to be there. Hey, Adam, great to have you on. Thank you. It's always enjoyable when you come on. We will talk to you soon.
No doubt, Paul. I'll buy the burger next time we're able to go. Sounds like a plan.
You got it. I can't wait. Adam Rittenberg joining us. Great to have him with us. We'll take a break. Tom Hart in the final hour previewing tonight's SEC basketball action. Don't forget the Big 12 SEC this weekend. Some huge games, including KU and Tennessee, I think Alabama, and who's Alabama playing? Texas or Oklahoma, one of those. We will take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. It's great to have all of you here. Don't forget, tomorrow at 2 Eastern, we find out when the games are. The football schedule will release. It also came out today that the media days will be in mid-July in Hoover, Alabama. So, it may seem like a long way off, but not here. It'll make you feel like it's just around the corner, which it is. Great to have you back on the program. It's been a busy afternoon of guests, and Agnes is up next in Florida. Hey, Agnes, go right ahead.
Hey, how are you?
I am well. Thank you very much.
You were talking about Coach Bryant and his death. I'm a first-time caller. But I was a medical student, either third or fourth year medical student down at Druid City Hospital.
Oh, my.
And you're absolutely right. He was talking and joking around. And, of course, we all knew he was in the hospital. So we just kept walking by his room so we could get a look at him. And sure enough, it was instant. He was talking to somebody. Then the next thing you know, they were calling a code blue on him.
Oh, my goodness.
And like you said, the streets between Birmingham and Tuscaloosa, you couldn't see a green space. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And after he died, my good friend Walter Lewis, who was a quarterback on his team,
oh, sure.
He came to the hospital and he asked me, is it true? So it took a while for the word to spread because we didn't have cell phones.
Agnes,
another thing.
What I'm just curious, and I know for as a medical student, you're supposed to be immune to reacting to anything, but that must have been just an insane place to be.
It was an absolute insane. It's like the earth stopped. I had never seen anything like it, and of course, it did not take long for the word to spread that he had passed. And it was like the world had ended at Druid City Hospital.
And for those who don't know, when you're getting off of McFarland Boulevard to make the loop into the campus, Druid City is right there. It's on your left, and then it's on your left when you get off, and on your left again as you head to Bryant-Denny.
Hey, Paul, may I make one other comment, please?
Absolutely, sure.
The debate about who was one and who was two. If you just eliminate the record, I vote Nick Saban. He has a larger number of players in the NFL. Alabama had no Heisman Trophy winners until him.
No.
And he has a decent graduation rate. And then last but not least, not a lot of coaches have to reload every year with either their offensive or defensive coordinator. So to be able to do that every single year, I mean, that makes you a great coach.
It does. How did your so if you were a medical student then, I assume you've had an interesting life.
I have, and I'm practicing in Florida now, but I will always and forever be an Alabama Crimson Tide fan. And I grew up in Athens, Georgia.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not a Bulldog fan.
Agnes, that is an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that. I felt like I had covered that time of the very well, but I don't know if I've ever talked to anybody who was that close in proximity to Coach Bryant when the end came. That is really remarkable. I try not to, these stories are now 38 years old, but yeah, and many of you, regardless of your age, have seen the video, the documentaries, there has been a lot of deaths that have had tremendous reaction. Obviously, we're a year away from Kobe Bryant. That's one of the most profound reactions in the history of sports. But, for a small area of the country, this day 38 years ago was, we're still talking about it. Let's continue with more phone calls, not quite ready for a break, and check in with Dave, who is in New Jersey. Hey, Dave, you are on the air. Go right ahead.
Hello, Paul. It's been a while since we spoke last April.
Well, thank you.
I don't know if you remember me. We spent some time talking about the accident, which left me a quadriplegic.
That's right. Well, thanks for calling, and I hope it hasn't been a great year for very many people, but I hope you've gotten through it.
Well, one thing I'm real good at is staying home, so it's been kind of business as usual. It's something I'm good at, but I had two quick questions for you, if I could.
Sure.
My wife wanted to know, she enjoys listening to your show also. She wants to know, is after you talk for 4 hours, if you have anything left to say to your wife when you get home at night?
Yeah, I will tell you, and I hope she's not paying attention, it's a fairly predictable comment to between spouses, like, how was your day? What did you do? And when my wife asks me every night, Dave, how was the show? The answer is good. And then she goes, any interesting guests? I go, no. It doesn't matter whether it's been the greatest show in the history of mankind or the worst show. I am done with it. And I say that jokingly, because sometimes she will pick up on it or hear it or see it when she gets home. But it is close to the very last thing I want to talk about when it's over here.
I can relate. One quick question about our alma mater, another more commiseration. And I enjoyed hearing our new athletic director, especially said he wanted to talk to the team first. And he made a comment saying he hopes he's the guy who can tell the team who their new coach is before they find out somewhere else. So I have a question for you. Now, let's say it's sometime very soon, maybe even this week, it's about 6:30, you're getting ready to bring in the last half hour of your show. And during a break, one of your top secret sources calls you and says, hey, Danny White just called a 7 p.m. team meeting for Knoxville. He's going to introduce the new head coach to the team, and he's going to release the information afterwards. He tells you the new head coach's name. So my question to you is, do you respect the wishes of the new athletic director and say nothing at all during the last half hour of your show that night? Or do you make the scoop and get the word out to your listeners, even though you know the team's going to find out it before the meeting?
Yeah,
it may ruin any kind of relationship you have with Danny White in the years ahead.
Dave, it's a great question, and I used to be in the scoop business when I was a newspaper reporter, and even on radio, we broke a lot of big stories. I am not in that business any longer, so I would be very reluctant. Now, the only way I would report it is if we had someone on the air with us who had confirmed it. But I would not just go. There are a lot of things. In fact, I knew about Danny White's hiring about, probably the night before, but I did not report it because I didn't feel comfortable. And, I think you have to weigh everything carefully. But I also work for the largest sports news gathering operation in the country. So if ESPN were reporting it, then we would be obligated to report it. But if it was just somebody calling me saying, hey, I just found out that Jamie Chadwell is going to be announced by Danny White at 7 p.m., I would probably refrain from going with it.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool. Well, thank you. I appreciate the insight, and I appreciate your thought process behind it.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work, and we'll be listening up here in New Jersey, and I'll talk to you in a couple more months.
I hope so. Dave, you be well, and always enjoy the conversation. That's a tough conversation, but, you know, we have a certain layer of standards at ESPN. I know that may surprise some of you cynics out there, but we will not report something just because, you know, we hear it. I mean, there have been plenty of times when I knew something at the level of 99.9999, but you still hold off until it can be properly vetted. I have had stories before anyone else and been wrong. Not a good feeling. We try to pass on those here as often as possible. We will take a break. We continue with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and we are back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and let's continue with the calls. Bill is in North Carolina. Hello, Bill. Thanks. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul. Hope you're doing well, and I appreciate your show. You do an outstanding job. Really enjoy listening to it.
Thank you very much.
Paul, I wanted to run something by you, and there's a reason for it, and we're talking about the Tennessee coaching vacancy that's currently there. And I want to tell you why I called. About 3 years ago, here in my home state of North Carolina, we had a similar situation come up where the University of North Carolina was in a coaching search, and their program was pretty much in shambles. And somebody within the administration of UNC thought it would be a good idea to try to get Mac Brown back. Well, you know, Mac, he was an established coach. He'd been at Carolina before, and then, of course, he went to the University of Texas and had what seemed to be a pretty successful tenure out there before the Texas administration decided he wasn't doing a good enough job, and they replaced him. And anyway, he was out of coaching for 2 or 3 years, and he still had the fire in his belly. So when Carolina called, you know, he came back, and I'm sure you know as well as anybody, over the last couple of years, North Carolina has had a resurgence and have had one of the strongest teams, you know, especially in the ACC. So that, you know, when you think about Tennessee trying to find somebody who is an established coach that is now coaching, and then you try to find somebody that maybe is a coordinator that you want to promote, but you've got these potential things hanging over the program, NCAA sanctions, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder if anybody in the Tennessee administration has thought about a coach that had been retired for a few years who may still have that fire in his belly and doesn't really have anything to prove. And when I think of that, the first name that popped into my mind was Mark Richt, who was the previous coach, of course, at Georgia. Now, of course, Mark Richt doesn't have any ties to Tennessee, but he is a proven recruiter, obviously. He's the kind of guy that could establish a group of coaches, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, et cetera, because he's been out of it for a few years. But he still knows a lot of people in there, know who is who and who is, you know, who's what. What are your thoughts about Mark Richt and somebody like Mark Richt that's been recently retired that still may want to come back with nothing to prove to help the University of Tennessee?
Yeah, Bill, I happen to think Mark Richt was a really good coach, and he went to Miami, and he had some pretty good moments there. The reason I don't think Mark Richt will be under consideration and is because of health reasons. Richt had a serious heart attack about a year and a half ago, and I've only seen him once since then, but I remember sitting with him about a year ago, and you know, he still did not look great. I think he's come through it. He's doing TV work, but I think that might be a drawback. But I will go to your original point on Mac. I was with Mac a lot in the football season. We were together in Connecticut every Sunday morning, and you're right. He had a burning desire to prove that he could still coach, and I think it's one of the great success stories that we've ever seen. He went to the Orange Bowl. He came without a hair of beating Clemson a year ago, as you know, and I couldn't find a better story than that one.
Well, you know, there and of course you and I have been hearing names, but there may be somebody.
There could be.
Hey, right?
No, I agree. I don't know who that person is. But I'm sure if you're the athletic director, you know who's available and who's interested. But it's an interesting suggestion, though. Thank you very, very much. Let's check in with Red, who is in Louisiana. Hey, Red.
Oh, great to hear you.
Thank you. Appreciate your call.
I just can't understand why Mr. Malzahn, coach of Auburn, is not coaching Tennessee yet.
Malzahn, in some ways, answers the last man's question. He is probably the best available former coach who is not working right now.
The guy has beaten Alabama. When he goes into Tiger Stadium, we don't know if the Tigers are going to beat Auburn when Coach Malzahn's over there.
No, you're right.
He can beat anybody in the East, right?
I would probably bet against him, and I'm trying too hard to think like a new athletic director who wants to put his imprint on, but we'll see very soon. I don't think this is a coaching search that will last very long. I think it's probably getting close to the end because you go through all these names, starting from Friday afternoon and Saturday and Sunday. It's not like Danny White is taking a day off. He is nonstop right now. And these things coalesce fairly quickly. Once you identify someone, then you make sure that your bosses meet him and it's over. We'll take a break. We still have an hour and change to go. We hope you'll stick around and continue giving us a ring at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back, and Joe is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Paul, I'm from Spartanburg, South Carolina. I've got several things I need to tell you. I went to Coach Bryant's office in the 70s, and he gave me an autographed picture. And what do you think about at the Bryant Denny Station, stadium named it the next Saban Field?
I think it's certainly something to consider, but I'm not really sure, it's necessary. Hey, I appreciate your call very much. Cat Daddy is up next. Hey, Cat Daddy.
Hey, Big Paul, looking good, sounding good. I got a big question for you, but first I'm going to tell you my Bear Bryant story. My father-in-law, was from Memphis, and he called me one time, and Alabama was playing the Liberty Bowl.
Right.
And he got us tickets right down on the 50-yard line, and we're sitting there, and the Alabama team comes out, and he punches me in the shoulder. He said, "Look, there's the Bear." turned around like 20 feet from us with Ben Bryant walking by. I didn't know whether to get down on my knees or salute him.
You should have done both.
I hear you. But here's my question, and this has been a big question going around here in Columbia since we hired Shane Beamer. Has there any been the son of the successful coach been as successful as his daddy?
Overall, I'm trying to think. I think right now I would say no. You look at Bowden, none of the Bowdens ever held on. I mean, they all had success. Lou Holtz's son has had some success, but I wouldn't call it equaling his father. I'd have to think about that a little bit deeper. We're talking about college football, right?
Yes, sir. Pass it along. Let some of your callers think about it, too. I was just wondering. That's what they're thinking here because they're hoping that Beamer can be that next as good as his daddy was.
Yeah, well, if Beamer is going to be as good as his daddy, he's got a long way to go because his daddy was one of the best coaches ever.
Yes, sir. Well, have a great day, Mr. Feinbaum. Appreciate being on the show.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think the answer is pretty simple, unless I'm missing someone terribly. Judge, what's up?
Feinbaum.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. When I come home from a long day at work, my wife always asks me, how was court? And just like you, I say, court was court.
Exactly.
It's the last thing I want to talk about.
No, you.
I know that feeling.
And my wife's a sports fan, by the way, so she'll start going. Yeah, I mean, did you hear about Tennessee firing Jeremy Pruitt? And I'm like, going, I just spent 4 hours talking about that. I go, I haven't heard that. Why don't you fill me in?
Yeah, well, it'd be good for you and me and my buddy still praying for you and your wife
for
good health for January. We'll get you a different prayer for February.
Thank you.
A couple of thoughts. One of your guests said that Kevin White should be careful because he's got these lawsuits with Jeremy Pruitt. You're going to have lawsuits when a coach gets fired. I'm not sure how that connects to the search for a new coach. Do you have any idea what he meant by that?
No, I think what he really meant was, first of all, Danny White's not responsible for any of that, as you well know.
Right.
I think he's more thinking about what the school faces with the NCAA investigation
right.
and sanctions.
Right. Yeah, I've looked up these reports on cash being in McDonald's bags. They might get sued because they weren't in Wendy's or Burger King bags, but are they denying that happened? Or was
well, first of all, Judge, that has never been reported anywhere but the Dan Patrick Show.
Okay, because that's the only place I could find it.
So, I'm not about to criticize Dan. He's a friend, and I think he's a great talk show host.
Right.
But I don't think I've ever seen Dan have a Pulitzer Prize up behind him, citing his journalism excellence.
Right. Hey, have you heard from Jeff from Ohio? I haven't heard from him since.
A friend of mine called me from Washington yesterday, and they said that with the Justice Department, which you should be able to get some information, he has now entered the witness protection program.
Tell Jeff we need you back online, Jeff. We come on down to Raleigh.
He is not the only Ohio State fan that has entered the witness protection program. I think our friend from Mississippi did as well, Buckeye Earl. We'll take a break. We still have an hour to go.